Before I left home, I solemnly promised myself I wasn't. My wife, she kind of got on my case about it. But anyway, since I started, I guess I'll have to explain what I'm trying to say here now. They have what they call, maybe this is good, I'll just talk to you a few minutes. They have what they call the cyclotron. It has to do with a nuclear reactor. When you say nuclear reactor, you're talking about, they do have nuclear reactors. That's something that has a control over the nucleus of an atomic particle. That is to say, the reaction, as to action and reaction of the nucleus. And they have some kind of reactors, a nucleus reactor, something they can control it with. This cyclotron, they can take a proton, they can put it in the center of the cyclotron, and then they speed it up and they spin it like this until it gets bigger, bigger, and bigger like this as it goes out. That is, it goes out through the cyclotron. And then they'll set up a target, like we'll say, for instance, titanium gas has atoms that they take one from the titanium gas. They set that atom up as a target. And the cyclotron, it hurls the proton, it strikes the helium atom. When this proton strikes it as a target, it penetrates and it goes in. When it goes in, it ousts one of the neutrons and it lodges. When it does that, it then immediately picks up another electron. So rather than two neutrons, one proton and electron, it has changed altogether to two protons, one neutron, and two electrons, which means it has changed entirely from titanium gas to helium. It has changed altogether to helium gas. So now you have a helium atom instead of a titanium atom. I said that to say this. We spoke here a while back about uranium decaying, as they use the terms. It decays. Or that is, the particles as to the electrons, whatever, neutrons, they kind of ebb away. And they are radioactive as they come out. And then after a period of time, when you go to look for your uranium element, you don't find it, you find lead. And it's nothing but a piece of lead, because it has changed, the form of matter has changed to a piece of lead. And of course, the atoms in lead is stable, so they don't run off looking for something, you know. It's kind of like a single man, he runs off looking for a wife. But when he gets a wife, he gets stable. She helps him to get stable. He don't look for another one. So atoms are like that. If they are missing in a certain thing, they go looking. They go searching. I had tried to explain this a little bit. And like I said, I promised myself, because of what Betty said, I wasn't going to get in it. Where some had asked me to get into it to where they could get it on tape or talk like they wanted on tape, where they could go back and rehearse it. I know that a lot of times we say things, maybe naturally and spiritually, that you might not be able to understand, and I know at the same time you grasp some of it. But if I program your mind with it by just taking my time and talking with you, then if you ever go back to it, you'll understand it and that thoroughly. Or if you get the tapes, you'll take the tapes and you'll go through the tapes, and after a while rehearsing it, you'll understand it. And I talk about these things simply for one reason. As I told a brother, this doesn't have to do with your salvation. You don't have to worry. If you don't understand these things, it doesn't have to do with your salvation. Salvation is in the simplicity of Christ. And it's simply by faith, by the works of the Lord Jesus through believing. That is heartfelt conviction. And I don't try to tell you these things so that it will cause you to be misconstrued in your mind as to think you've got to learn this to get salvation. But it is imperative as to a degree, as to whatever your growth might be. For instance, ages past, it was the Stone Age, the stone man. They dealt with the materialistic side of life as to, we'll say, the first level of life. That is to say, the earth, the stones, whatever. The elements, not knowing a title as to elements, but just as some kind of compound or substance, mass. See, that's all they knew, and they made use of it as to whatever they could. And we still today do. And of course, in this advanced scientific age, they still resort to those forms of matter, as to gold and silver and iron or wood or stubble or clay or whatever it might be. But the difference is as coming from a solid to a liquid to a gas, God being a three-in-one and always creating as a three-in-one in his act of creation, he breaks it down even at Calvary as a trinity to a three-in-one. And people who are unlearned, that don't know, they get caught in the Trinitarian act of God and they don't realize that God is one. And God allows that because Satan gets into that. Satan sees his opportunity for learning as to try to figure out God, so he gets caught in the Trinity and he can't get out of it. God has so made it as a deep gulch that will swallow him up as to the day when it closes in to come back to its state of oneness. But anyway, we see that as to a 1, 2, 3, we find that we're not in the Stone Age anymore. We've advanced. We came into like a liquid age as to a broken down age. You know, as from solids, I say this again, we say compounds, a mass, a form of matter. I explained that a little more explicit the other day. And coming to that, we found out that through numbers of great scientific men, as God would have it, that there is an invisible world that we've not been able to see, such as the gamma ray, the X-ray, the beta ray, the alpha ray, some of these things radioactive. We've not been able to see those. Our eyes, the limitation is from, we'll say, from infrared to violet. That's about the extensiveness of it. Beyond that, our eyes doesn't see. And then I said that a man's understanding can only be equal to his knowledge. He cannot have anything other than that. The equivalence of his understanding is just exactly according to his knowledge. What he knows, he can understand. If he don't know it, he can't understand it. Now, he might know it, not understand it, in that Solomon said, with wisdom, get understanding. See, but he has opportunity to learn to understand what he knows as to his degree of knowledge. So again, a great principle there is, a great law principle, you would say, that if that holds true, there's no possible way that you can judge the situation as to an ultimatum of life. It's impossible because you don't know enough about life. You could not judge the universe as to its activity and the way that God has made and created it to function, though we ought to know it. Yet it's the true fact that many don't. And that's because their understanding being the equivalence of their knowledge that they've never known. They've never applied themselves. So I said all that to say this, that if we use the terms as to energy and forms of matter, in that we who are human beings have to seek and search out vocabulary expression as to human definition, as to whatever our knowledge might bring us to, as to words. You know, like a country boy, he'll say, get them things out of there. Or as a little country boy or girl will say, that screens, get that screens off of that window. You know, and that's all they know, you know. And to them, they never bother to think about it. Somebody says, what are you talking about, a screen? So I'm talking about that thing on that window there. You know, and they go on because they don't know any better. And such like as to many, many things, you know. Even in Spanish, one of the difficulties of learning Spanish is they've got so much slang. By the time you get through all the slang, it's hard to find anybody that speaks the real language. And English is the same way. But anyway, if we accept it as to what terms we have to work with as to human indoctrination, then E equals mass, and that is, we say again, multiplied by the square of the velocity of light. Velocity, of course, indicating speed as to the speed of light, 186,300 miles per second. So if you square that off, and I explained the other night as the way to square, most of you would probably know how to square. If I said, give me the square of a letter 9, or if I said square all 4 for me, you know, you come up with 3, or either 16, or you come up with something to bring a square. It's a square, the speed of light, to multiply the mass by. Like this, that sounds fantastic, but like 2 pounds of coal produces, as to energy when broke down, 25 billion kilowatts of electric as to run a situation or to give strength or power to whatever, which is supposed to be, as said, more than all of the U.S. generators put together in their plants running 2 solid months, day and night. So you would say, you mean that within a little tiny thing that this kind of energy exists? Well, it's like the atom bomb. We've said this before. Taking the radium atom, which subjected to certain principles explodes of its own accord, giving off the alpha and the beta and the gamma ray, the little radioactive particles, taking that and subjecting another atom to a place to where you can bombard that atom, and that is to say a uranium atom. We use the terms uranium atom. The uranium atom burst, whereas the nuclei of a radium atom, it burst and that was the end of it. No chain reaction. But as to the uranium, it burst and there was a reaction as to 1, 2, 4, 6, or 8, 16 in a chain reaction. And this, of course, is where the atom bomb come from. And that is, as we said concerning Calvary, as a fission of separating the neutron from the proton in the nuclei or the nucleus. In the hydrogen bomb, it's just exactly the opposite, as to fusion, which is more dangerous because they don't know how to control it as of yet. We see this as a releasing of energy. It's easy for me to reason that if this power is in the enclosure of a little atom, which is a tiny substance of a molecule, a tiny substance of a substance that has formed the mass of molecules to be a form of matter. If I can get that much energy out of one little atom, I could easily understand how that out of 2 pounds of coal, you could get that kind of energy. So these things have a profound meaning. And I guess the Lord is letting me kind of relate a few of these things this morning. I definitely wasn't going to do it, but I think he did it because there's something I want to speak on this morning, and a little bit of groundwork as to say in these few natural things might help you to understand spiritually what I want to define this morning, if I have the time. Satan makes sure that to suppress one as to the time period, and to have a congregation perhaps that's not indoctrinated with the natural types, and then to make sure that you're hoarse, to do everything you can, if you could just find somebody to be a little contrary in the audience, he'd have it made. But strangely enough, my audience behaved very politely and very reverently, and occasionally I find as there is this morning a natural-minded person sitting here this morning, and he's more or less scorning me a little bit because I'm talking about these things, which is all right. He doesn't have salvation anyway, but he's not trying to be ugly. It's just his way, you know, of considering me as to measure me by himself. Paul said people measuring one by another, that is themselves, one by another, they're not very wise. And as to say a diplomacy or some kind of degree, it just shows more of the ignorance. But we're not measuring ourselves by him this morning. We're measuring ourselves by Christ. And we're not vainly puffed up by a fleshly mind to think that we might know something or understand something. You know, as to say, if I was the one that was doing the talking. But we prefer to let the Lord speak and try to edify the church that it might be a benefit to him. And I just say that so that that one person might think things over, because their problem is they think too highly of themselves. All right, so then, getting back to our source now. It is a true fact that we had a stone age. And then we came to another age. Sometimes people refer to one age as a medieval age. So we come to a mid-age. And we move away from the stone age. Not in the sense that we made use of it. We still build stone buildings. They're about the best you can get. Brick buildings. It's always made out of substances to some element, whether it's iron, nickel, gold, whatever as it was with Solomon. And as I said, there's about 105 elements that's known to mankind. It was about 104, I think. Maybe they might have added another one. But anyway, you can have it 104, 105. I've seen it both ways. And in this, about 90 of them supposedly are God-made. At least that many. And man has made a few of them. Fabrics, someone would say, how in the name of reason can a man make an atom, Brother Pike? Well, if you'll check the atom out according to their diagnosis, you'll find out that it's a genuine atom with neutrons and protons and electrons. We might explain that just a little bit, but at any rate, you're only saying fabrics. Like a man might make nylon, you're saying another element has come into view. So really, as to atoms, you're just saying fabrics. That's all you need to know about it, or I. But if you break it down like you would nickel or gold or anything else, you'll find the atomic particles just exactly like the others. And as we were saying, these atomic particles, they number according to a numerical order. They have an atomic table for them. And they number them as 1, 2, 3, you know, 5, 8, whatever. And they do that by the little proton that's within the nucleus. The proton, if it atom has one proton, then it's number one. If it has two protons, it's number two. Ever how many protons, they don't bother with a neutron as to numbering, as to the numerical order. And then when they go to weigh the atom, which is supposed to be, as comparatively speaking, I've said this a number of times, as a pea to a cathedral, if it was magnified into existence, as the atom itself. And when they go to weigh the atom, they use a different approach. It's still a numerical approach, but they take what they call the mass of the atom, whether it's 2 protons or 15 protons or 8 neutrons or whatever, and they don't number it by just the proton as the numerical order as 1, 2, 3, but they number it as a mass unit. That is, they number the protons and the neutrons, the mass of the nuclei. And they use as a basic of that an atom of carbon, which supposedly has 6 neutrons and 6 protons. So it would be the weight of 12 units. And this, of course, is the way that scientists weigh it. But anyway, these little things vary, as in an element, it might be silver. But within this element, they vary. And one may have more neutrons than another. And as to the weight of the atom, they don't weigh the electrons. Let me say this. They don't weigh the electrons because they're so light, so minute, that it is said if you should magnify millions of times the nucleus, so as the proton and the neutron would be magnified into view as to whatever, that there would still be so much space between that nucleus as to the proton, neutron, and the electron, that the neutron would probably be 1/4 mile out here circling around the nucleus. And you could imagine how little it would weigh if it is, in comparatively speaking, as a speck of dust to the nucleus, even after magnifying that much. So they don't bother that. But in the element of these things, the atoms differ. Some doesn't have as many neutrons as others. And we explained to you a little bit ago about the cyclotron and changing from titanium atom to helium atom, and how that one nucleus went out and a proton came in, and when the proton came in, made 2 protons, so it had to pick up another electron to balance it. Whereas at first it had 1 proton, and then it only needed 1 electron, but it had 2 neutrons. So then, you see that the titanium gas differed from the helium gas as to the atoms, because one had 2 neutrons while the other had 2 protons. So one had 1 neutron, the other had 2 neutrons. So that would make them different. At this they call an isotope, like the isotope carbon atom, the weight of 12 units. And we spoke of the photons as the little packets of light, as the grains of light, supposedly called quanta, as to that of Planck's discovery. And this little package of light, how that right at this particular time, now like they may launch today the Atlantis, I don't know, they're supposed to launch it, go up into space and then take the Magellan and turn it loose for 15 months to circle Venus and record all the data they can concerning Venus, and after 15 months unveil Venus, and it's supposed to travel about 8 months for the first rendezvous maybe, and that's supposed to be a day, a Venusian day, in the time difference. And of course that's what we want to talk about this morning, was time. So I'm speaking of the minute particles to bring this about. So we see that with the minute that we cannot see, there is an invisible world. There is now an invisible world that being brought to visibility, like the microscopic world as to microorganisms. So another world of its own. Had to be magnified into view, whether it's of your body as to the study of human physics or human anatomy, or whether it is as to astronomy, as to the cosmos and these things that are out in the galaxy and out in our universe. Whatever it might be, it is minute. It is another world. And they that have the mind to go out into these things and bring this into existence are people who dwell in that world, and they are thrilled over it. Like Einstein once said, I said this to you, he said, the thrill of going into the mystic. Without that, life wouldn't be worth living. These men live on a different level. Some people just live to feed their belly. They just live to splatter in the water, you know, to make money, to have more money, to buy cars, to have more cars, to buy land, to have more land, to build houses, to have more houses. And they're like a dog running around after his tail. The old Indian death mark. And so it is. It's the same thing. When it comes to science, unless it's God that's in the arrangements. But anyway, You see, all these things are before us. And our children are being taught that our world come from a vapor. I said the other night, I couldn't bring this out in detail because we had some visitors back there that they got completely lost in the first few things that we said. I had to take a different route. So I guess that's why the Lord let me talk to you this morning while your minds are fresh. We've got like a great scientist over in Washington. And he says, of course, our world comes from a vapor. That in the beginning, there was nothing but a vapor. And it forged together in a compact way. Similar to what the others say as to a nebular mass and everything springing off from the mass being a collection of dust and particles and whatever. And they never are able to explain where the particles come from. Man has to have something to begin with. So this fellow, he's come up with the idea that it's vapor. And with this, the heat's so intense that it is unimaginable. And he called it an inferno of homogeneous primordial vapor. And he says the heat is so intense at this point that not even atoms can survive in it as to the dissolving. It all goes to vapor. But then he comes up with the idea that somehow it begins to expand. And then as it begins to expand, he calls it one critical moment, just one critical moment, and all of a sudden it drops down within a million degrees. And then atoms come forth. Atoms start formating. And then with that, molecules. And then with that, forms of matter. And of course, here comes our stars and our moon and everything else. And of course, that is the heights of the education and understanding of the brilliance of today. And that's what your children are being taught. Science, falsely so called, as much ignorance as I've ever heard displayed in my life. That is one of the biggest statements of ignorance I have ever heard made. And all the other science go along with it that take God out of the arrangement. Saying to go back 5 billion years, which is still ignorance, and back to their little carbon discoveries, their little vertebrate discoveries, the age of coal and tadpoles and seaweeds and chimpanzees and finally to a man, which is ignorance. I do not say that Darwin did not have good understanding in some things. Some things I'm sure that in his evolutional theory was good, because I can see some things in an evolving state. Revolutionally speaking, I see things in a spin as to the solar system. But when it comes down to talking about man evolving and coming from a monkey, that's stupidity. I think that's the proper word. I always search for a place for that word, and I believe that's it right there. I believe that's just plain stupidity. Folks, one of the reasons I say that is simply for the reason that the Bible said God created man out of the dust. It didn't say nothing about no coals and tadpoles or chimpanzees or nothing else or 5 million years to get him there. I don't believe it took God 5 million years to make him. I can't see why God would take 5 million years to make something that's only going to last about 6,000 years. Seeing me like that would be ignorance. And if it took 5 million or billion years, if it took that long, we'll get it right here, if it took that long, it would seem to me like it would make sense that once you got your product, you would at least enjoy it a little while before you just snuffed it out. So I can't accept that. And I think of God creating man and then saying, from the evening till the morning was the first day. I don't know how he got 5 million or 5 billion years in there. I can't figure out how he did it. I can't figure out how he did it. Really, billions is what I'm speaking of. I don't see how he got it in that one day. If he got it in that one day, the other days sure have run short according to our calendars. But I do understand how the Bible says, the day that thou eatest thereof, thou shalt surely die. And it brings it down to a man's lifetime of about almost 1,000 years, which, as the Bible said, 1,000 years with God is a day, and a day is 1,000 years. And I can look back and see that he worked in 6 days, and we're almost to the end of that 6,000 years. I can put that together. But this other is just unreal, that this man should say that within this period of time, as to the vapor, that all of the stars, once they come into existence, then they started to play their role down through these millions and millions and millions of years to come to the place as to a maturity of a full star and whatever, you know. But in examining it the way that God did it, the Bible said everything growed before it was in the ground. That is, it was like Sister Frances setting her bushes out yesterday that was already grown up, and she just set them in the ground. She didn't plant no seed to get them. And God didn't put a seed to reproduce a man. He put a man. And in the originality, as to the origin, he just put one of a kind of a thing and said it'll reproduce after its kind. There was no evolving to it. To evolve, one would have to turn into something else and turn into something else, turn into something else. See, and you'll find in most cases of anything like that, it would be a hybrid substance that wouldn't reproduce if you tried it. It would go to seed. So then God said it would reproduce after his kind. Somebody would say, well, that's why I don't believe in intermarriage. No, you can intermarriage, it just reproduce after a man or a woman. Whether it's black, white, yellow, red, that's still man and woman. But when you start trying to mix a man with a donkey and mix an elephant with a lion and a lion with a monkey, you're going to run into some problems. So it's like the reproduction of an ass and a horse, and you get a mule and you've come to an end. He goes to seed. As a rule, there's no reproduction of it. So it looks real good when you hybrid, you know. But it's not good. It's not God's way. God likes thoroughbreds. That's why I preach the way I do. He likes thoroughbreds. You know, like today, you've got a thoroughbred bulldog. He's a pretty thing. And yet he's as pug as he can be. But he's pretty because he was made to be pug, you know. Like I said, giraffe. And Betty and I, we rode through Africa. Rode down through these trees and hear this big old giraffe, number of them walking among the trees and up over the trees looking around. And they're real beautiful because they're not, they're the skin and all don't look dead looking and whatever, you know, it's real oily and shiny and a lot of life. I thought, that's so beautiful. And I thought, what could be beautiful about a thing sticking up above the trees like that? But it is. Yeah, I mean, it's beautiful because that's the way God made it. Well, anyway, I won't dwell on that. Maybe I'll have to talk to you about this morning, something else tonight. I want to tie them together. Maybe we could say a word or two. How do you understand what I'm saying? See, so here we are, we're with the world. Now our children are educated. They know that everything came from a vapor, and that in the beginning you was a vapor. You wasn't a monkey, you was a vapor. So when you get far enough along, you know, that the heavens are made, that is to say the galaxies. Bible said God made the firmament, set the stars in it. That's my conviction. You know, he made the firmament, and he set the lights up there, and he set the stars and the sun and the moon for sign and season. But their idea is, you know, somehow it emerged out of a vapor after millions of years. So after you get far enough along that you do that, you come to hatch out on earth. And then when you get that far, Darwin, he takes you the rest of the way. The scientist of Washington, he takes you the first lap of the way, and then Darwin, he picks you up after that, and he takes you the rest of the lap of the way, and you come from a chimpanzee to a man. So all of them have an education. I'm glad the Bible says that all of them that are of God are of good understanding. How do you believe I'm of God? Do you believe by that I'm of a good understanding? I tell you what, folks, I believe you to be of a good understanding because I believe you of God. I take it that you're, if you are of a good understanding, them folks out there ain't of a good understanding. that something's messed up their understanding. I really believe that. They might be fine folks, but they sure got their understanding messed up. And the only allegoric type I can find is to understand it by spiritual revelation is people that are in the insane asylum. They've got their understanding messed up. And them people are, spiritually speaking, in the insane asylum. They're crazy. Don't have any good sense. And what makes it so bad is the law is taking your children and my children and forcing them into that educational system. So I believe that we ought to move to the point to where knowledge moves to us from point A to point B and then stop and not go crazy on some wild hallucinations and wild ideas as to theoretical assumption. I think we ought to be sober. But anyway, as I was going to say, to try to get on to say these few little things, to get over where we can say what I'd like to say. Scientists is disturbed. They feel like our galaxy, you know, that thing with a lot of stars and vapor and all this kind of thing, and like one of them, they say is about 60,000 light years across. You know, they say that to encompass our universe, it'd have to be about 35 billion light years around it. And if you took a trip as to a light beam going around it as from point A to point B, make it a complete circle, about 200 billion terrestrial years. But they're looking out and they see the galaxies and they say that they're moving away from us. And they say at about a million miles out, as one would say, moving at about 100 miles a second, moving away. And about 250 million out, they would say, moving at about 25,000 miles per second, moving away. So it's moving away. Moving away. And I hope that to say a little bit about that as to in more detail in that I've just proportionally measured out to you the speech, I'd love to come back and kind of detail it as to getting into what we'd like to say spiritually. But we could go on and go on and go on because these things are there. They're out there. They've got their palimpsestic view now out in Palo, California. They raised it up from about 5 light years away to about 10 light years away. Beg your pardon, 5,000 to 10,000 light years away. And they've raised this thing up to where they can get better views, terrific views, which to me is, well, we use the word astronomical. Of course, it would be if it's astronomy, you know. But sometimes in our little minute world and what we're confined to, we say, whew, that's astronomical, you know. That thing escalated so till it got out of our reach. But they are able to observe with better observation than before. And so they're probing on and on and on. But yet, our universe is gradually moving away from us. So coming to those things, they are out there. Have to be brought in telescopically speaking or whatever. Or microscopically speaking. If they are out there, and if there is a world out there like that, and scientists have proved it, then Paul said that the spiritual cannot come until the natural has forerun it. Now, if there was a stone age over there, and there was a natural forerunner, as to that being the stone age, that is to say that in the stone age, spiritually speaking, our people were without understanding. Man came into the world, he had no understanding. That's why Eve did what she did. See, so it was like as to a stone age in the spirit. Nobody understood. A state of ignorance. Even Adam didn't know. That's why they escaped death as to eternal damnation. See, but the Stone Age showed that. But now, if there has to be a progressiveness as to a transformation of mind, as to an indoctrination, becoming an educational thing, moving on toward a diplomacy, as from elementary school on over, then coming as from a stone age of primitive things Now we move on over. Then there comes a time in heaven when we're not quite as ignorant because we're learning more about the invisible things. At the same time, scientists is forerunning, and they are revealing these natural things to us to let us know that there is an invisible world, and the type is bringing them from a state of solid, just to the Stone Age, to a state of liquid. That is to say, when you say liquid, when we think about it, we think about water, you know, running out of a faucet. We can't picture liquid in our little finite understanding as molecules running around, you know, that's not even connected to one another. That liquid is when you put heat under solids. I take a simple thing like ice. There's movement in the ice, but it's froze. There's not very much movement, but still life in there. Paul said, nothing left but the quickening. So then, as to the natural, there's an electrical quickening, which has to be a type of God. So then the ice is heated up, it melts down. Thus it becomes a liquid. It's no longer a solid. This is a real simple thing. So we say, well, what is that? I see the water in there, it's running around, you know, it's all together. But if you could see it as molecules, it means that whereas it looks like it's together now, it's just now separated. It was together before then as a solid, compound together. It was a mass. We say E equals mass. That is mass of what? Mass of atomic particles, which means molecules, or equals matter, which is a composition of the mass. So these molecules begin to run around just loose everywhere. But to you, it's a liquid. See, but it's an individuality is what it is. Now, if you heat it up to the next stages, as defined the latent, which is the hidden secret as to heat, as to what it takes to convert or bring it to a certain temperature. Now, so you're going to heat it up again. When you heat it up again, you're going to break down your molecules. When you break down your molecules, your atoms are going to run around loose then. See, a solid, a liquid, which is molecules. Solid, which is mass, liquid molecules. All of a sudden, the heat makes the molecules turn loose of the atoms because a molecule is a composition of atoms. And the atoms, of course, is a composition of the little electrical part as to protons, neutrons, electrons. So, see, you heated it up from the solid to the liquid. So you got a pan full of water. Now you're going to heat it up to a gas condition where you're going to turn not the molecules are loose from the solids, but the atoms are loose from the molecules. When you do that, then you got vapor. That's a gas. It's now gas. So that's what God does to the earth. He vaporizes the water to a gas, takes it up, and as we said, and the firmament separated the waters below the firmament from the waters above the firmament. And the waters below the firmament, he gathered together in one place, called them seas, let the dry land appear, called it earth. And the waters that is above the firmament is clouds high up into the heavens. And they're congealed up there, floating around. And one of the things that we learn is that within our immediate environment, as to say, atmosphere, hemisphere, stratosphere, ionosphere, these kind of things, see, we find a magnetic field as to this earth turning and this magnetism given off. And one reason is because there is a fire, as I would understand of God, in the heart of the earth. And that thing is burning. The Bible said, hail from beneath is moved from beneath thee at thy coming. There has to be an actual symbolic thing of hail. And is of the lake of fire. And we could go on and go on to those things. But anyway, to understand the spiritual, Paul said, all of the invisible things of God from the creation of the world are clearly understood by the things which do appear even to the eternal Godhead, so that we're without excuse. So, there's a gravitational flow around the earth. It remains within that. And as to that, that gravitational flow is as to electromagnetic field or a magnetic field. As to them being kindred, they've been trying to prove this. They can't get them together just right, but they'll find out they are. And as to this magnetic field, this is where life exists within that and going out from it as to launch the Atlantis. They've got to have a great thrust from this has a launching pad to go out beyond the spheres, to get into outer space, to where there is no magnetic control. These things could center around two or three things, and that is potential energy, kinetic energy, and inertia. So in this, they make this combustion chamber to the rocket. At present, about 3,000 miles per second. That's just about it. They can't hardly go beyond that. And they're contemplating loosening up things a little more as to solids, as to liquids, as to a gas, plasma. And they use this as a plasma, you know, not getting into a vapor, like gasoline, more like gasoline. And they're using this for their thrust. Now, they can't understand how they can go beyond that. They have potentiality as to more speed. And a lot of times you and I think, well, why in the world are they so primitive? Why don't they go beyond that? But when you get down to basics, it's not that they don't have more inviting potentials, but they cannot understand what to do with the heat. At 3,000 miles an hour, it heats up to where they can manage. But if they go up to about 7,000, which they're wanting to do, they've got to do something. You know, you have to compensate, and they've got to do something about melting the combustion chamber. So, and they consider that they might be able to get up to 27,000 miles per second, which will build up so much heat, they don't know what to do. But that's again, working with the atoms and the atomic particles. So their last venture as to an ultimatum of speed. You know that light is supposed to be the maximum when it comes to that thing as to determining a positive law of principle as not getting beyond, which that adds up because God is the light, and you don't go beyond God because the Bible said, every man that be perfect shall be his master, but no man shall be above his master. So when we see this, their ultimatum is that they've come up with a quanta, which is the package of lights, little grains of light. And they, again, have said that these are not in a continuous flow as to being like water would appear to the eyes. That is, they are in broken segments. And they come even as you stand before a heater, that your heat comes in little bombardments like that. And Einstein is the one that came up with this thing as to it not being a continual flow, that is light. Whereas evidently it is to look at it. But he could not explain it in a continual flow. So he made it convenient for his explanation and his equations. And equations, I say again, is coming up with something that's determining an equality as to an equivalence. And so what happened was he decided it comes in little quantas. So then scientists has decided that this is the way it gets across space, in that it doesn't have anything beyond the magnetic field as to the electronic flow. That is the magnetic field of the Earth or the magnetic field of that which is around the sun. But in between as to the space is nothing carried. So they settle on the fact that it's little quantas as packages or little grains of light moving. Now, they've decided that this light doesn't give off the heat as to the radiation as, you know, if it was right up at the fire around the sun. You know, I've seen this in talking with the Lord. There is fire, there's heat, and there's light. That's the three stages. Always everything's in three stages. And when you bring it to three stages, you understand it real good. So then when we consider this, they are going to build, as they say, a complex lamp, which is, of course, a fire. Complex, perhaps, as to how it's put together, explain it, whatever. And they're going to make the combustion chamber, as usual, on the rocket. But they're going to concave just beyond the lamp. You know, as they say, concave like this, or out convex like this. They're going to concave like this. And they'll set the lamp here, and the lamp will throw a light, and the light will hit the concave part as to this. When it hits it, it will reverse it, And it will turn it around and it will create such a thrust and not the heat that would melt the chamber. Such a thrust as it goes off like that, the rocket will be moving almost at the speed of light. They've not said that they could come to the speed of light. I guess carrying the weight like 100,000 pounds here to get off the launching pad would change it as to just the light traveling by itself. But as I say, 100,000 pounds here to be 1,000 pounds up there once it shells off. And then a 100-pound payload once it reaches its destination. So we see that we come to the one thing that I wanted to come to. As to speak to you about, and I have a little in detail made a comparison as we went along. A little bit in detail as to spiritual things. Whereas I can preach a sermon and just bring in a little bit here and a little bit there. Just as a substantiation of something I might say to you. And that would be good, because that's what we do preaching, as to illustrate. But the thing is, if I can give you a basic fundamental of these things right on down the line, like Sir Newton said, as to fundamental units or bases of these things, then you can understand the invisible world to some degree as formulating your mind. And then when we come back, I won't have to run out there to those things. So often I say one thing, a chain reaction like that. See, it'll hit that nuclei on the inside of you. And that'll be that great expansion as to that light that was so bright that it literally set human bodies on fire. And you'll expand in such a great measure from the vision of Calvary as to this great explosion, this great light, the shaking that when Daniel was fasting, all of them running left him when the shaking come just before the angel appeared. And the Lord let that happen to get them all away so nobody would see the vision but Daniel. See, and when this thing breaks, as in the fission of a nucleus, as to say Jesus made it himself twain, as to neutron and proton, or we say Christ and Jesus, twain, too. One, a positive charge, that is to say Christ on the proton side, and the other a negative charge. That is to say, the body being made sin and in darkness, because if it would be in the negative part, then it would relate back to that which would not be a positive. People have a light as to an understanding, but it's called a dark light, in that Satan is interwoven with their spirit, spiritually speaking, as to the invisible. Having said those other things, so you'll have a better means of comprehending. Paul said to comprehend the heights, the depths, the length, and the width. See, a person out there, they have a light, but it is Satan which hath been a reflector, like the concave mirror. See, and with that, they have a light, but it is a dark light. The Bible said, if that light within you be dark, how great is that darkness? That is the dimensional depths, and that the Bible said some have never known Satan as to the depths of Satan. See, and if that light be dark, which means you've come to an understanding, scientifically speaking, in school, as to be in the world, you've got a light. See, it's only a type. That light there has come down, and Satan has reflected until you've got a type. Now you say, well, how could Satan reflect, Brother Pike, if Satan has been cast into the outer darkness? Because he hath climbed back up. And the Bible said the serpent hath climbed up into the upper lintel, getting back as to the heavenly part. And that by grace, as to the sacrifice of the Son. That is to say, taking your sins away and Satan living within the sinner. See, that freed him from that era of darkness, darkness being ignorance. So then he is reflecting, as standing between you and God. He is still taking on that reflection as in the days of grace. See, and he is reflecting. So he comes up with types and shadows. That's all he can understand. He can't get any farther. Grace, if you remember, is not only on you as children of God, but it's on the world till it has done away with their sins in the eyes of God. For Jesus died to take away the sins of the world, and it will remain that way. Maybe someday we can elaborate on until... It will remain that way until you're changed. And your change has to do with the vision. For the price has already been paid as to redemption of the body. But to comprehend will bring us over to the point of fusion. which means the resurrection, as to the return of the Spirit back to your body to pick up the dead. And Christ, as it was with Jesus when he picked up his body. So then they are in a negative world. And that has to be before you can get a positive. Because if you don't shoot a negative, you don't get a positive. And God shot that negative when the Shekinah flashed within the garden. And from that time, he's processed it through the chemical reactions as to the blood and the spirit and whatever. All the way down to Calvary, the veil is rent. And out of the darkness comes the positive. And we're living in the day of the positive. And that's why that we are teaching the things that way we're teaching them. Not as to the stone age. Not as to the liquid age, as to a mechanical of broken things through that mechanic age where they still have to use the term mechanics even in the astronomy world. But as to the mechanic age, which is a wilderness coming all the way from the Red Sea over to the Jordan and then Canaan. See, so I'd have to go into the particulars to make you understand what I'm saying. But we're moving now out of the mechanic age, which was an age of confusion. It was from the time they crossed the bloodline, as you say, in new birth, that is to come across the Red Sea, all the way through the wilderness, that these serpents are biting. You're having trouble with devils and demons all the way. And the reason is because you are in the intellectual age, just the breaking down. For it was in the wilderness that they were tutored from the Red Sea over to Jordan. And it was the confusing age. Even to the point where they dishonored Moses and the earth opened up and swallowed them up and they quickly went down to the pit. And it is just before the entering in to Canaan that Joshua takes over. See, getting over that old mind of gullible desire of your own face, your own body, your own fashions, your own hunger, your own thirst, to project your own self and come to a place where you kill out yourself and deny self and mortify the deeds of the body as the bastard child, to get rid of it, to bury it in a watery grave. Coming to that, see, Joshua takes over. He brings you over the Jordan. But the good part is that God, having given us the former reign as to whatever the tutoring was back there, whatever the light was as to the light of the lesser light, under the veil, that is to say, the Jew, the former house. Here comes the light that's unveiled as to the latter house, the church, the light of the world, which is the greater light, that light having no glory by reason of this light that so excels. It's like a candle lost within a fluorescent. If it's dark, the candlelight can give power, but once it's caught within the fluorescent, it isn't even noticed. As to the stars at night, compared to the day star, the great inferno as to the fire of the sun in the daytime. So then we see that we're moving on. And in this, the walls must crumble. But at the same time, we must have a day without night. Because the Bible said the Lamb is the light of that city and we're the city, lively stones. And Paul's the wise master builder, as God who laid the foundations and not him living, but Christ built up into a holy priesthood, even to the third heaven where Paul was, as to the lively stones, that is to say, to bring in this beautiful city of God. And the Lamb is the understanding of our hearts, which is the light of that city, as a diamond that has light, fire, light, quickening. So then, he being the light of that city, that beautiful city, we find out that we are children of light and that they will not come upon us unawares. We'll know when it's nigh, even at the door. And that we see it through eyes of understanding as to comprehend. And the world will not see it, but the Bible said, Satan, even Lucifer, the god of this world, that is the prince of darkness, he hath blinded their eyes, even their eyes of understanding, that they cannot see. They cannot comprehend, that is. Cannot see when good comes. As to my eyes, I cannot, as to natural, see the gamma ray. But as with my eyes of understanding, they've been enlightened. I know what the gamma ray is. The X-ray and those kind of things. But I see it with another eye. See, and it's so with the children of God. They are like scientists with their telescopic view. As to that telescope that I saw come down from heaven in a vision. And I looked through it like that. And when I looked through it like the Palenberg telescope, I got excited because I saw into heaven. And numbers of times I've had visions where I was looking and saw the things and activities in the heavens. See, and it come down through a cloud to show that it was mystically hid. So as to the mystic things, you have to rend the veil as they're doing to Venus. Something we'd like to elaborate on maybe following down the trail. All right, so we see that something has happened. Someone would say, well, what is it, Brother Pike? Well, in a real simple term, the little boy that went fishing, he's been getting a nibble all the time, but he didn't know what anything looked like. He didn't know how big it was, but now he's hooked him. And he's then brought him up to the surface, and though he's dancing and jerking and trying to get it loose, he's getting a good look at him in the sunlight. See, and that is to say that that which is invisible is at last come into view, scientists making this known. Has the little boy said the tug on the kite, but I just know it's up there, I can't see it. But as he winds it in, as I've done many times when I was a little boy, put it out of sight and then wind it in. I have put it out of sight, maybe a little straw baby they call it, and work it around to my window and tie it to my window where I slept. And every now and then I'd wake up and look out there and see if a straw baby was still there. Way out of sight. Little boy, they do strange things. They steal their experimental way of life, you know. Ours is an experimental life. Even if we just take a bite of an apple just to discover the taste. Life is a great venture. Life as to Christianity is a great venture into faith, as to the mystic world, as to the unknown. Now it's coming to view. Those that are not made for that world, as the eagle for a great heights and the rocks and the mountains, can stand that weather conditions and whatever. The little bird would freeze to death. See, but you that are made to stand that great height like the eagle, way, way up into the heavens you soar. The others, they get shaky. They can't take that. They get nervous. Like the man, we gave the little illustration. The man wanted to buy the pearl from this other man. And he said, no. He said, why not? He said, because that's the pearl of great price. The reason was because his son had lost his life diving to get the pearl. He had to go so deep, he wouldn't sell it. He said, money can't buy it. This is the depths that Jesus fathomed, where he went down, down to the deepest depths. And that's the pearl of great price, as to the Holy Spirit when he brought him up. You can't buy it. To say one word against it, you're eternally doomed. It's such a pearl of great price. And when a man discovers this great Holy Spirit, he'll sell all he's got, his ambitions, things of the world, to purchase this one field. And this is the way you differentiate us, to know the good from the bad, and children of the world, as from the children of the natural, the child is known by his doings. When you see a man trying to project himself, project his own thing, money hunger, want to make a bigger salary, make more money, do something for a business, all these kind of things, you know that he hasn't found the pearl of great price, because he hasn't sold out. Anytime he does, he'll sell out altogether. So then we find that people that are so interested in doing things, even with their hands, with their mind, whatever, unless it's a thing for God, they're still on the back burners, we say. So this thing is coming to surface now. What is it? It is an ultimate change as to a transformation going to the word that we brought out the other night, the entropy. The entropy. I hope you'll give me a few minutes just to say these things. That is to say, we supposedly came from a vapor. And all those things have their place as to explanation. But now, since the galaxies are moving away, it is a positive conviction, unanimously speaking, of all science as a rule, that since the galaxy is moving away, that the sun is burning out, and that the stars are but dying embers, and that matter is dissolving. And energy, speaking of kinetic energy, energy is dissipating into space, into emptiness. This is a positive thing. They've proven this. So they say, with this, a great calamity is about to befall mankind as to when this comes about. Or that is to say, entropy, which is a measure of a degree as pertaining to the thermodynamics, or that is going to energy as to determine how much energy is there, and as to that that's missing. It is also like a transformation, or as to measure emptiness. Let's say it like this, that with this entropy coming to what they call a maximum at the all-time high, as far as it can go, that with this, it indicates that everything, as we would use the terms, has neutralized. So there is a heat death coming for the universe. No more heat. No more light. And no more life. Now they say really there's nothing to be alarmed about right now because it's a few million years away. That again is the state of their ignorance. They've come to some discovery. But the Bible said they'll not know because they're blinded. We know it ain't a million years away. It's just like 1990, they're going to unveil Venus. Only 7 years left as to a tribulation period, if you want to term it like that, calendar-wise, because of the 3 years inaccuracy as him going as a child, that is Jesus, up to the temple. And that brings us within about 15 months of what they're planning to do. And who knows what lies between now and then. And again, the calendar is all out of sauce as to change the dates, times, and seasons as to Julius Caesars and others as to the mind of Satan in those human bodies. So that man can't tell the day nor the hour. But I'm telling you, as children of light, that even scientists has discovered that your universe is gone. And I say again, as to the Stone Age, as to the Liquid Age, we're coming out of that now into the Canaan Age. That is into the New World Age, that is to say the Millennium. And now we are exploring the world of astronomy as to the universe. See, they know that if these things that we're taught in school as to the periodic movement of the outer planets or world or sun or whatever it would be. They know that this is a measure of time. Whereas I say again that any periodic movement as to things in motion can prove to be a periodic measure of time. I say again, as 1, 2, 3 on my pulsation, as to say counting time as in music. Now, they say then that if maximum entropy has set in, then that means to you and I that all of this is happening. It has dissolved, it has changed, it has become like a lukewarm condition. And people in the world that are lukewarm are responsible for God bringing the earth to this kind of consummation. In that they will not be cold or hot. And in any way, cold or hot will work. But in a lukewarm state, it won't work. So then they are bringing their own destruction, not by the discovery of the atom bomb, as God will use that to shake the heavens, the hydrogen, whatever. But as to the lukewarm condition, the religious condition. Because if Adam was upright, and when he sinned against God, that indicated a tilt away from that great sunlight, then the world had to follow accordingly. And as to when man's upright, again, the world will come upright. And we could say a lot about that. As to the calamity of the nations and the cities, great cities falling to the ground, crumbling. See, if this earth, as to your condition, as to the third dimensional move of God now that we're out of the Stone Age and we're going into this last age, as to the third heaven. First heaven, and I won't go into those things, but as the first heaven, so it was with the Jews. and with Canaan. As of the second heaven, so it is with the Gentiles, as of the blood on the seat of atonement, to allow them to have healing and all these things by medical profession. And as of the third heaven that Paul was caught up into, not being him but Christ, is to be our head, then that means that is the revelation of the Son of God. It's coming into this third era as to where Paul was caught up, which is paradise. Paradise. And we have to say a lot about that. Maybe sometimes we will. So we see that there's another generation now, another people now. As 2,000 of water life to the flood, as 2,000 of blood life to Calvary, as 2,000 years of spirit life to the change. And in every case, as a water life to the days of Noah, it hit it right on the mark. And it changed into that new world. And as 2,000 from Noah over to Jesus, Peter said, "You're the people upon whom the ends of the world have come." Being a Jew, he knew that the law and the prophets were gone. That was another world. And it hit it right on the mark. And there was a transformation to a new world. We're in a new world now. This is the day the Lord hath made. John entered into it by sending it by the revelation. So 2,000 more years, it's going to bring it right on down to us as a spirit lifeline to angelic world, and it's going to reveal the angelic world. It'll hit it right on the mark. And it's so wonderful because everybody's not for that world. The Jews went out because they were not for that world. They said, "Restore the kingdom." He said, "It's not of this world." It came into the hearts. From then on, it was a different kind of a world. The Jews went out. Those people that lived 900 years, they went out with the flood. Those people that came in to live 120 years, they went out. Those people that are now confined to, as we say, 70 years, they're fixing to go out. And you know what the results of it's going to be? I'm going to be there to live forever. Let's give the Lord a hand. Somebody say hallelujah. All right, we're going to stop right here. I could go on and on and on. There's so many more things that needs to be said. So many, many, many things. But great is the mystery of godliness. Paul said, "I'm a steward of the mysteries." Let's stand together. Appreciate you bearing with me this morning that I could talk with you like this. Hope I've said something that might be enlightening or might prove to be a foundation that at a later time that things might be said either by me or somebody that by that the Spirit of God can quickly relate you to it. So you are, as a new generation, the young ones that got over the Jordan when the elders died in the wilderness. So there are elders that in every case of every dimension. And they died, and then there came a spirit people. The spirit people also, among them there are elders, that is not as a natural person, but as a spiritual elder. And they will die out. Man is planted in the grave, the spirit goeth back to God who gave it. Or that is to say, they know many things, but they've never come into this generation where your spirit will understand, that is, their spirit could understand what your spirit understands. So now your spirit has come into a day and an age to where there won't be anybody dying in the wilderness anymore, because there won't be any wilderness. There won't be any darkness. Yeah, some of you are young. I know that, 25, 30, 45, you might die. Numbers of people are doing it everywhere. All kinds of problems, and you may die. I know that. And as it has been said that the younger are outdying the elders, as a proof of a statistic thing they said. I know because of diseases and eating, drinking, frolicking, staying up at night, all kind of things, and running for all kind of medicine and everything, afraid you are going to die. Fear, frustration, young men's hearts fainting for fear of them things that's coming after the world. Women throwing themselves to the wind, you know, developing all kind of disease. Now, that could happen. But there are some of you that are going to come into the Spirit, that your spirit will never die, whereas others religiously had to be cut off at a certain point because they could not obtain unto the fullness as is to the full measure of the full Spirit, as to this that God has given us. So then, you that live in this world, eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow you may die. There's nothing better than for you to just eat and drink, Solomon said. Ye that are for the next world, then apply yourselves, study to show yourself approved, a workman unto God that needeth not to be ashamed, rightly dividing the words of truth. Because it's through study that this man called Paul come into revelation. Study not as to read how many books, but study as to divine meditation day and night. While I'm walking along and you're talking, I'm studying. While I'm at home, my wife and others are doing whatever comes needful or necessitated to life, I'm studying. My mind is always in a state of study. Study to study. And sometimes whatever it calls for, that's what we do. Well, this is my life, and as a man said to me, without the mystic, life wouldn't be worth living. For as it was said, at the base of every true religion, I believe I can find that, as to that that longs for the wonderful mystery world. It's not given unto the world to know the mysteries, but unto you it's given. Let's sing a little chorus. Everything to them is parabolic. Everything to them is allegoric. Everything to them is symbolic. Let's sing a chorus together, can we? I'm real hoarse and I can't sing very good. We'll make an effort. Give me another key, friend. I love him. I love him. All because that he first loved me. And he purchased my salvation on Calvary's tree. Every promise in the book is mine. Every line, and we're trusting in the word divine. For every promise in the book, it is mine. Every promise in the book, it is thine. Every chapter, every verse, and every line. And we're trusting in the word divine. For every promise in the book, it is mine. For every promise in the book, it is mine. Every chapter, every verse, and every line. And we're trusting in the word divine. For every promise in the book, it is mine. Maybe tonight we can make mention of some things concerning the end of time. I see these little girls come down here. They're so pretty. They look so pretty in their long dresses. So wonderful to see a testimony of decency. The Bible said a little child shall lead them.